First book of Chronicles, chapter 12, verse 19. One Chronicles 12, verse 19. And there fell some of Manasseh to David, when he came with the Philistines against Saul to battle. But they helped them not, for the lords of the Philistines, upon advisement, sent him away, saying, he will fall to our master Saul, to his master Saul, to the jeopardy of our heads. As he went to Ziklag, there fell to him of Manasseh, Adna, and Jozabad, and Judiel, and Michael, and Jozabad, and Elihu, and Zilthai, captains of the thousands that were of Manasseh. And they helped David against the bands of the rovers, for they were all mighty men of valor, and were captains in the host. And at that time, day by day, there came to David to help him, until a great host, like the host of God. Now, 1 Samuel chapter 29, please. Now the Philistines gathered together all their armies to Aphek, and the Israelites pitched by a fountain which is in Jezreel. And the lords of the Philistines passed on by hundreds and by thousands, but David and his men passed on in the rearward with Achish. Then said the princes of the Philistines, what do these Hebrews here? And Achish said to the princes of the Philistines, is not this David, servant of Saul, king of Israel, which hath been with me these days or these years? And I have found no fault in him since he fell unto me unto this day. And the princes of the Philistines were wroth with him. The princes of the Philistines said unto him, make this fellow return, that he may go again to his place which thou hast appointed him, and let him not go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he be an adversary to us. For wherewith should he reconcile himself unto his master? Should it not be with the heads of these men? Is not this David? For they sang one to another in dances, saying, Saul slew his thousands, and David his 10,000s. Then Achish called David, said to him, surely as the Lord liveth, thou hast been upright. My going out and thy coming in with me in the host is good in my sight. For I have not found evil in thee since the day of thy coming unto me unto this day. Nevertheless, the Lord's favour thee not. Wherefore now return and go in peace, that thou displease not the lords of the Philistines. David said to Achish, but what have I done? What hast thou found in thy servant so long as I have been with thee unto this day, that I may not go to fight against the enemies of my lord the king? Achish answered and said to David, I know thou art good in my sight, as an angel of God. Notwithstanding, the princes of the Philistines have said, he shall not go up with us to the battle. Wherefore now rise up early in the morning with thy master's servants that are come unto thee, come with thee. And as soon as he be up early in the morning and have light, depart. So David and his men rose up early to depart in the morning to return into the land of the Philistines. And the Philistines went up to Jezreel. The men at the back who never made it to the front The front being used in the heading, of course, in the military sense, as the scene of actual fighting. In the same sense as it was used in the now famous World War II newspaper headline concerning General Douglas MacArthur, MacArthur flies back to front. Having exposed the extent of Saul's alienation from God in chapter 8, the Holy Spirit now picks up the thread from the opening verses of that chapter and explains how it was that David, having been assured by Achish that he was to accompany the king to the looming battle with Israel in the event, never reached Jezreel, the scene of the conflict. And in this chapter, the spotlight moves onto Achish rather than David, with the words of Achish filling almost half of the chapter. First half of the chapter records the exchanges between Achish and the other Philistine rulers. Follows a pattern. One, the opening words of the rulers, beginning of verse 3. Two, the response of Achish, end of verse 3. And then the firm and decisive words of the rulers, leaving no room for further argument, verses 4 and 5. And then the second half of the chapter records the exchanges between Achish and David, following much the same pattern as the first. One, the opening words of Achish, 6 and 7. The response of David, 8. And the firm and decisive words of Achish, which left no room for further argument, 9 and 10. Verses 1 to 5 then, Achish and the Philistine rulers. Is not this David? The Philistines gather together all their armies to Aphek. Now, as I noted when we introduced chapter 28, chronologically, this verse follows straight on from the opening verses of chapter 28. The Philistines first gathered all their armies at Aphek before making their way north, mainly up the coastal strip, to Shunem, which is what chapter 28 verse 4 talks about. I have to take a detour. I know that some have conjectured that the Aphek of our verse is not, in fact, the Aphek of chapter 4 and verse 1. That our Aphek was located somewhere in the far north, not far from Shunem and Gilboa. For example, the Kildelich commentary, no less, on our verse reads, Aphek, which must be carefully distinguished from the towns of the same name in Asher, upon the mountains of Judah, and at Ebenezer, 1 Samuel 4, is to be sought for not very far from Shunem, in the plain of Jezreel. I can't accept that. First, I note that we are told explicitly that David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day, chapter 30, verse 1. But Shunem was a good 90 miles journey from Ziklag, and it would have been impossible for David and his men to have covered such a distance in less than 3 days. Second, it is most improbable, bordering, I suggest, on the impossible, that the other Philistine contingents would have failed to notice the presence of David and his 600 men as they made their way with Achish all the way from Gath, the southernmost city of the Philistines, right up to Shunem in the far north. Third, that there are only two references to an Aphek in the book of Samuel, chapter 4 verse 1, chapter 29 verse 1. And I consider it most unlikely that without one word of clarification, chapter 29 would be speaking of an entirely different Aphek to that which featured prominently back in chapter 4. Fourth, we are told that the Aphek of chapter 4 had been the site where the Philistines mustered their troops prior to the battle fought with Israel at Ebenezer. So I find it hardly surprising myself that the Philistines should use the same Aphek as their rallying point on this occasion. And for those reasons, I'm satisfied. I'm altogether satisfied that the Aphek here in chapter 29 is one and the same as the Aphek of chapter 4. And you say to me, why do you waste our time telling us that stuff? Because I must, in that, the chronological sequence which I have suggested to the events of chapters 28 and 9, rest on that identification. So it's important you get it right. If it's wrong, then the fabric falls. We find, therefore, that Aphek, and this is important to the structure of the book, which isn't my issue, but Aphek played a key role in the first and the last battles between Israel and the Philistines, recorded in 1 Samuel. At the outcome of the battles, separated as they were by a whole generation, was the same. Game, set, and match to the Philistines. The Israelites pitched by a fountain which is in Jezreel. Now we can hardly miss that the chapter both begins and ends with a reference to Jezreel. We're told at the close of our verse, it was there that the Israelites pitched. And the close of verse 11, that the Philistines went up to Jezreel. It was therefore in the valley or plain of Jezreel that battle would be joined. The valley of Jezreel had been the scene of the battle many, many years before, when Gideon, with his gallant 300 warriors, had routed the combined forces of the Midianites, Amalekites, and children of the east, 135,000 in number, odds of 450-1 against. But alas, in the forthcoming battle at Jezreel, Israel would not fare so well. The valley, joining with the valley of Esdraelon to the west, is that main corridor through the rugged Palestinian hills, forming the crossroads of two major routes. One, that which leads from the Mediterranean Sea on the map on the west to the Jordan River Valley on the east. It is the only course across from east to west that is not impeded by the ranges of hills. And secondly, it was the main route that led from Syria, Phoenicia, and Galilee in the north to the hill country of Judah and beyond to the south. And the Philistines, just like that Midianite alliance in the days of Gideon, clearly realized that a victory over Israel at this point would give them a major strategic advantage. It would cut the land of Israel into two and provide them with their launching pad from which to attack either Galilee in the north or the main area of Israel in the south, or both if they felt so inclined. Now, although we read that the Israelites were at Jezreel first, I think we have to assume that Saul was somehow aware of the Philistine plan to attack in the north, and therefore positioned his forces there in readiness. I see no way in which otherwise Saul would have moved his whole army as far north as Jezreel, with the Philistines massing at Aphek, because that would have left the entire central section of Israel open to Philistine invasion. Apart from which, we noted when we looked at chapter 28, that the Philistines had every reason to prefer engaging Israel on the level ground of the Jezreel Valley, where their numerous iron chariots would give them decided advantage. For them to have launched a full-scale attack from Aphek, and it was to be a full-scale attack, they gathered all their armies to Aphek, for them to have launched a full-scale attack from Aphek would have required them to cross the hill country of Ephraim, to reach the area around Shiloh and Gilgal. The drawbacks of negotiating that mountainous terrain with their chariots were enormous. Saul was clear. This was not going to be some border skirmish between two standing armies. This was to be a major showdown between two nations. The Philistines were going for a knockout. Verse 2. The lords of the Philistines passed on by hundreds and by thousands. Philistine army was broken down into military divisions, hundreds and thousands. That seems to be pretty standard military practice in those far-off days. You read of captains over thousands and captains over hundreds in Israel several times in the days of Moses. And how when facing the forces of Absalom, David set captains of thousands and captains of hundreds over the people that were with him. And indeed, the implication of Saul's words back in chapter 22 is that he had done the same. Saul said to his servants that stood about him, "Hear now, ye Benjamites, will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards, and make you all captains of thousands and captains of hundreds." That follows normal practice. The word translated lords, the lords of the Philistines. You find it 21 times in the Old Testament, and always, invariably, no exception, reference to the Philistine lords. And on every other occasion, to the rulers of the five Philistine city states. I note that the expression, the five lords of the Philistines, recurs like a refrain through the books of Joshua, Judges, and ours. Because the Philistine kingdom or realm consisted of a pentapolis in which the lord of each of the five cities shared equal authority with the others. But for political, military purposes, the five city rulers often work closely together. That on this occasion all five Philistine lords appeared in person, along with their various contingents, shows just how crucial the Philistines considered this particular battle to be. It was not then, as we might be tempted to interpret the opening verse, that there were hundreds and thousands of lords. That's not what it means. There were only five. But that the troops belonging to these lords passed on in review by their hundreds and thousands. But David and his men passed on in the rearward with Achish. Of the five brigades of soldiers who trooped by that day, the fifth and the last was that of Achish. And as commander of the king's personal bodyguard recently promoted, David would doubtless have accompanied Achish at the rear of his brigade. In other words, David was at the back of the entire Philistine army. And that was one of the most crucial positions of all. Because it often happened during a battle that one army would attempt to outflank another so as to attack them from the rear as well as from the front. Indeed, sometimes happened that one army in its entirety would circle behind the opposing army to attack them from the back. And indeed, that was the very tactic which David followed under divine direction and successfully adopted against the Philistines, indeed, in chapter 5 of 2 Samuel. When David inquired of the Lord, he said, "Thou shalt not go up," advance to meet the foe, that is, attack them from the front, "but fetch a compass, circle round behind them, come upon them, attack them against the mulberry trees." David did it, completely routed the Philistines. And for reasons like that, those stationed at the back of the army were always among the finest, bravest, most capable warriors. And thanks to the unbounded confidence which Achish had in David, David and his men were given this great honor. Now it seems that it was about now that those seven outstanding warriors from the tribe of Manasseh joined David's company. 1 Chronicles 12, for which we read, informs us there fell some of Manasseh to David when he came with the Philistines against Saul to battle. Which description fits only that brief period between David's commission from Achish at Gath, chapter 28 beginning, and his departure from the Philistine army at the close of chapter 29. Now, although Aphek itself, it's a Philistine city, falls within the Israelite tribal territory of Ephraim. Aphek is not in the land of the Philistines. Forget that bit. Although it falls within Ephraim, it is just 5 miles from the border of Manasseh, through which territory the Philistines would be marching north to Shunem. And it is in any case possible, of course, that the incident that we meet in verses 3 to 11 didn't actually occur at the Philistine gathering point at Aphek itself, but perhaps some short distance along the road north, perhaps very soon after the Philistine forces entered the territory of Manasseh. Either way, it fits, dovetails perfectly. And the 7 who defected to David, remember they've left Saul to do this, weren't insignificant men by any means. They had been prominent military leaders in their own tribes, in their own tribe. There fell to him of Manasseh, Abner, Zilphi, captains of the thousands that were of Manasseh. And it adds, they helped David against the band of the rovers, for they were all mighty men of valor. The band of the rovers against which these mighty men of valor fought alongside David were, of course, the Amalekite raiding party of chapter 30. And I note the expression band of the rovers translates just one Hebrew word, often carrying the meaning of a raiding party, and is the very same word used in chapter 30 to describe the Amalekites, translated in your King James Bible, troop in verse 8 and company in verses 15 and 23. But if you flatten out those confusing different translations, then that's the battle in which these men were to be engaged. And we can take it for granted, surely, that such men as these 7 captains would never have ignored Saul's desperate call to arms at this time and chosen to follow David and throw in their lot with him, unless they had been wholly convinced that when it came to the big battle, David would be fighting for Israel and not against them. Verse 3, then said the princes of the Philistines. Now we have a problem. Some commentators distinguish between the lords of the Philistines, mentioned in verse 2, 6, and 7, and these men who confront Achish in verses 3 to 5. They point out the words used to describe them are different. That whereas the word translated lords is used only in a technical sense to speak of the 5 kings of the Philistines, this word translated princes is very common in the Old Testament. Ranges over a whole wide set of contexts. It refers to leaders, officials, captains in many nations, including, for example, it's used of Abner in chapter 17, it's used of David in chapter 22. And these chaps suggest that the objections to David's presence came initially from the military commanders of the Philistines, who would be the men who would be actually doing the fighting, who acted on behalf of the Philistine lords, and who could be said, I suppose, in one sense, to have the most to lose, their necks, to be precise, if David proved to be a turncoat. But on the other hand, there are those who take the view that the words refer to the same individuals, and that this variation through the text is introduced merely for the sake of style. Personally, and it's not worth a great deal, To me, the concluding words of Achish in verse 6, "The Lord's favour thee not," on the back of the objection of these princes, points, I think I could say strongly, to there only being one set of leaders in view, namely that of the four other lords of the Philistines. But on that I would not be dogmatic. When these lords observed David and his men in the rear guard, they were dumbfounded. The appointment of David to his personal bodyguard, when he did that, Achish had meant to bring only honour to David. But he brought only horror to his four allies. What do these Hebrews hear? Achish, have you lost the plot? Don't you know who we will be fighting? Hebrews, that's who. Who'd you put behind us to guard our backsides? Hebrews. Hebrews, by the way, being the way throughout 1 Samuel that the Philistines always refer to Israel. Now, given that those who joined David from Manasseh at this time numbered just 7 men, and the Philistines would have had no way of knowing, as you know, because the Spirit of God tells you these things, that they were mighty men of valor, I don't think it was their presence in particular that sparked the Philistine objection, contrary to some. Achish said to the princes of the Philistines, "Is not this David, servant of Saul, king of Israel, which has been with me these days or these years? I found no fault in him since he came to me to this day." Aha, Achish, quick on a draw. "You never heard of mercenaries," he shot back. "That's what David and his men are. And I assure you that ever since he defected to me, since he transferred his allegiance to me," that's the meaning of the Hebrew word translated "fell to me," "I have found him to be wholly dependable." What's the problem? The expression "these days" or "these years," I should explain, is an idiom, meaning something like a year or two. Perfectly consistent, of course, with the fact, which you know, because the Spirit of God's told you, that David dwelt in the country of the Philistines for a full year and 4 months, back in chapter 27. Not bad, Achish. But Malcolm guesses you might have found a slightly less provocative way to describe David than "the servant of Saul, the king of Israel." But I wonder what you would have said if you had known, Achish, that you, the deceived, were here doing your level best to defend your deceiver. Now, for my part, at this point, I can't help but compare the words used by this pagan ruler about David, "I have found no fault in him." You're there. With the words used by another pagan ruler about the son of David, of whom he said 3 times, "I find no fault in him." It's John 18 and 19, of course. But what a difference. Because contrary to the charge laid against him by the Jews before that same pagan governor, and in marked contrast to David, he, the Lord Jesus, was no deceiver. With his eye on Isaiah 53, Peter accurately said of him, "Who did no sin, neither was guile found in his mouth." Verse 4, "The princes of the Philistines were wroth with him. The princes of the Philistines said unto him, Make this fellow return." They were not only aghast, they were irate, demanding that their naive ally make this man, literally, return, return. Which together with his apologetic disclaimer to David is what, for his part, Achish was compelled to tell David to do. Verse 7, "Now return." And is what? Notwithstanding his protested innocence to Achish, for his part, David is finally compelled to do. Verse 11, "David rose up to return." Let it not go down with us to battle, lest in the battle he be an adversary to us. For wherewith should he reconcile himself to his master? Should it not be with the heads of these men? They argue first from common sense. Verse 5, they will argue from history. But first, they point out that they could think of no better way for David to maneuver himself back into Saul's good books than by operating as a kind of fifth column within the Philistine ranks. And when the occasion came, by rolling some Philistine heads. Interestingly, the Septuagint renders the words, lest in the battle he be an adversary to us, as let him not be a traitor, a plotter in the camp. And I suppose from their perspective, if I were wearing their sandals, a man who had earlier gotten himself installed into the royal family of Israel by slaying a few hundred Philistines and producing their foreskins as proof of his prowess, might just be thinking that he could as easily get himself reinstated into that royal family by producing some Philistine heads as proof of his loyalty. With the heads of these men, they say, in all likelihood, I guess, pointing to the Philistine troops who've just paraded past. Did you notice? I don't know how carefully you read your Bibles, but did you notice in 1 Chronicles 12 that the Philistine Lord's real concern lay as much, probably more, with their own heads? What did I read? The lords of the Philistines, upon advisement, upon counsel, upon deliberation, sent him away, saying, he will fall to his master Saul, to the jeopardy of our heads. Literally, with our heads. They are saying, in effect, Achish, you say that at some time in the past, this man fell, defected to you from Saul. We say he could just as easily in the future fall, defect that is, same word, back to Saul from you. And frankly, we have a nasty suspicion he might just do it with our heads in his hand. And for Malcolm's part, I have a sneaking suspicion that Goliath would have agreed with them. And we can hardly forget David's later tactic to which I did refer, when under God's direction he successfully employed against the Philistines, when he did circle round behind their army and he did attack them from the rear. No fools, these Philistine lords. Again, I don't know how close you read your text, but have a go at this one. I find it intriguing that whereas the Philistine rulers say to Achish concerning David, let him not go down with us to battle. Later, when speaking to David, Achish quotes those Philistine lords, I'm in verse 9, as having said, he shall not go up with us to the battle. Did you notice that? What's it mean? Well, I assume, it's only a guess, that in this verse they have in mind that when they reach the battleground itself, Jezreel, both sides will take their starting positions on higher ground, from which they will then go down to the actual fight. Whereas in verse 9, they are thinking of their current journey, which is not only north, but upward into the higher central ground of Canaan. And I do note in support, verse 11, the Philistines went up to Jezreel. It's a geographical statement to go up. Where is the coming down? I interpret as coming down the slopes of the mountains around Jezreel. Verse 5. Is not this David, of whom they sang one to another in dances, saying, Saul slew his thousands, and David his 10,000s. So much for the Philistine leader's argument from common sense, verse 4. Now came the history lesson, or you might say the music lesson. as the other rulers sarcastically hurled back at Achish the very words he had used when introducing his defense of David. "Is not this David?" he said. "Is not this David?" they said. And it was a repetition of those words in my section that suggested the heading I've stuck on the first half of the chapter. And the words of Achish's comrades to Achish also echo perfectly the words of the servants of Achish to him back in chapter 21. "Is not this David? Did they not sing? Did they not answer one to another of him in dances, saying, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s? That's chapter 21. Achish! I can almost hear these Philistine lords. Achish! "You were ready to listen to your servants then and send David packing. Listen to your fellow kings now and do the same again." Achish, every youngster in Ekron Elementary School knows that song. They're singing it. And I'm not making that bit up. The tense that the Philistine lords use is literally "of whom they sing." Answer in dances, not "of whom they sang." They like the song. Back to the Philistine lords. "And what do you think, Achish, that popular composition was written to celebrate? Four marks, Achish, people being slain. Which people, pray? Philistines, that's who. And apart from obviously extolling David's exploits above those of Saul, what else does the little ditty tell you, Achish?" It tells you that Saul and David were once on the same side. Were once, listen, watch our lips, Achish, they were once linked together against a common foe. They were once linked together against us. Achish, send the man back, and that's final. And Malcolm can't help noting that in his own inscrutable way, my God used the very song that had at the beginning turned Saul against David in the first place to stop David from coming to Saul's aid now. We'll have to leave it there.